Usually when a poet sells 5-10,000 books, they think about it as a major milestone. So when you find out that Billy Collins' new book, Aimless Love, is number 15, last I checked, on the New York Times bestseller list, you realize that Billy Collins is not your typical American poet. People like him. In fact, the New York Times calls Billy Collins America's most popular poet. He's certainly the most visible. He was on Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion on Saturday. He's been on the Colbert Report and now back in Seattle. We're always happy to have you in the Northwest. Thanks for being here.
Great. Nice to be here.
In my mind, I envision some golden time in days yore when the poet was revered. And am I just making that up, or did such a time exist?
Well, there was, I guess if you really go back before printing was popular, you had poets who were revered only by a small group of people, that is the aristocratic audience that they had, and many of them were attached to courts. But once you get into the 19th century, then you have, people like Byron. Byron said he woke, after the publication of his poem, Childe Harold, he said he woke up famous. And Byron was really the first sort of, if you'll pardon the expression, sort of rock star of poetry.
You know, if you ask people to name their favorite poet, I think there's two that people might name. They might name Mary Oliver, and they might name you. And you told an interviewer, I can't remember who it was, that your poetry was unabashedly suburban. And I wonder if that's why people name you.
Maybe. I don't know why. It's hard to account for your own popularity. In fact, it's really downright embarrassing to even think about it. But I think I have a persona who speaks in fairly straightforward language. I mean, he uses a very simple palette of vocabulary. The poems usually start out including the reader, with not making demands on the reader right away. And then the poems tend to take off in some odd direction and carry the reader into some little imaginative corner. And I think those are basic pleasures that poetry has offered for centuries.
So you don't feel a pressure to attack with your poetry the burning great issues of your soul?
No, I don't have any of those, fortunately, or I can't think of them. No, I write about everyday things, but then these poems aren't autobiographical. I mean, you wouldn't know much about me, but they are autobiographical of things I'm thinking about.
Well, actually, the last volume of poetry that I read before Aimless Love was sort of about death. They were ruminations more on the past and the legacy one leaves behind. Aimless Love is a compilation, I should say, with a large section of new poetry. Mm-hmm. And I've told you before we turned the microphones on that I'd marked a series of poems, and then you read most of them on Prairie Home Companion. But there is a poem that I loved so much, the first one in the new section, that if people didn't listen to Prairie Home Companion, or if they did, they get the joy of hearing this again.
That's right. Well, the poem is called The Sandhill Cranes of Nebraska. Too bad you weren't here 6 months ago was a lament I heard on my visit to Nebraska. You could have seen the astonishing spectacle of the sandhill cranes, thousands of them, feeding and even dancing on the shores of the Platte River. There was no point in pointing out the impossibility of my being there then, because I happened to be somewhere else. So I nodded and put on a look of mild disappointment, if only to be part of the commiseration. It was the same look I remember wearing about 6 months ago in Georgia, when I was told that I had just missed the spectacular annual outburst of azaleas, brilliant against the green backdrop of spring, and the same in Vermont 6 months before that, when I arrived shortly after the magnificent foliage had gloriously peaked, Mother Nature, as she is called, having touched the hills with her many-colored brush, a phenomenon that occurs, like the others, around the same time every year, when I am apparently off in another state, stuck in a motel lobby with the local paper and a styrofoam cup of coffee, busily missing God knows what.
It's Billy Collins' poem, Sandhill Cranes of Nebraska, from his new collection, Aimless Love, a compilation of some older poems and then a lot of new work, which is so fun to read. And it's not often that you laugh out loud when when you read poems, but I laughed a lot out loud while reading your book, which just so happened to be while I was enduring a power outage, so it was the perfect companion. Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Laughing in the dark.
Luckily, it was daylight when that happened. I know that you tweet. You've got 3,500 or so followers, and I wonder how art, your art or anybody's art, exists in this world of technology where there's a gazillion, where everything's supposed to be 140 characters long, right, or it's fleeting.
Well, I don't really tweet. I don't know where that arose, but I've really never tweeted. But tweeting is interesting. I mean, I don't do it because I just presume people aren't too interested in anything I happen to be doing, which is the content of tweeting so far as I understand it. But poetry's been tweeting, if you will, for centuries, because poetry is based on compression. And if a tweet is 140 characters, is it? It's, I think, oddly analogous that a sonnet, which is 14 lines in iambic pentameter, is 140 syllables. So, and haiku, I've started counting, is usually it's 17 syllables, but it's more like under 100 characters. So haiku is tighter than tweeting, and the sonnet is a kind of expanded tweeting. But it's a very, very key to the whole notion of poetry is that something is done in with brevity and care.
One of the things I wondered was if you would talk a little bit about that process of sitting down to write. You write often about taking pen in hand. I don't know if that's metaphorical or if you actually do write longhand.
Well, I do write longhand, and I think I'm still, even though I've been, you know, I was U.S. Poet Laureate, I'm still self-conscious about being a poet. I'm always quick to admit in a poem that I'm writing. This is something that's written. It's not something that fell out of the sky or that it sprung from my loins or my forehead. It's someone writing words down. I write in longhand. I write four or five drafts, one after the other, and they become better, I hope, and then it goes onto a computer.
So how do you know when it's done?
Well, you know if a poem is done, or I know, because my poems have momentum, I think. In other words, they're going somewhere. I don't know where they're going, but I can feel a kind of momentum or forward roll of the poem. And then when the poem reaches its destination, which could be anything, it seems that I recognize it as clearly as you'd recognize a train pulling into a station.
There's another hilarious poem. I'm not sure if I'll have you read it or not, because you did read it on a Prairie Home Companion. It's called The Suggestion Box, and it has to do with where poems come from, so you can choose. If you don't want to read it, that's fine.
Well, I could say something about it. People tell poets what they should be writing about.
So. They do.
And it's the suggestion box. The poem is all about people saying, you could write a poem about this. You're going to write a poem about that. And they're always wrong.
Do you have to feel that something hits you a certain way for it to be the source material for a poem?
Well, I'm already struck by everything, but that doesn't get a poem written. What gets a poem written is an initiating line. You know, the first line of the poem is sort of the key signature. It sets the tone, it sets the sensibility, and it pushes the poem off in a certain direction.
So once you get that right, you feel like it sort of propels you in the direction to the end.
Yes, then it's game on.
Let me have you read another one.
Okay, here's a poem called...
I let him choose this one, so it's a big surprise
for
me.
Who knows? Uncensored. It's a poem about cliches, and it's called Adage. When it's late at night and branches are banging against the windows, you might think that love is just a matter of leaping out of the frying pan of yourself into the fire of someone else. But it's a little more complicated than that. It's more like trading the two birds who might be hiding in that bush for the one you are not holding in your hand. A wise man once said that love was like forcing a horse to drink, but then everyone stopped thinking of him as wise. Let us be clear about something. Love is not as simple as getting up on the wrong side of the bed wearing the emperor's clothes. No, it's more like the way the pen feels after it has defeated the sword. It's a little like the penny saved or the nine drop stitches. You look at me through the halo of the last candle and tell me that love is an ill wind that has no turning, a road that blows no good. But I am here to remind you, as our shadows tremble on the walls, that love is the early bird who is better late than never.
That's Billy Collins reading a poem that I didn't count, but I should have counted how many cliches were included in that. One of the things I wondered is what a poem can do that prose cannot.
Oh, all sorts of things. I mean, I think poetry exists at the far limits of prose, after the possibilities of prose have been exhausted. Well, the trouble with prose, if we're talking about prose fiction, is that it's entangled all the time in all of these, I would say, bourgeois concerns. Will Tom marry Allison? Will Barbara have Charlie's baby? Will the train arrive on time? I mean, come on. I mean, that's good for a while, but fiction tends to be mired in plot and one damn thing after the other, whereas poetry can take wing and go in any imaginative space you can imagine.
And they're yours are vastly entertaining, and they're not all vastly entertaining, so there's a difference there. You keep writing. Obviously, this book is full of new poetry. Do you fear a time that the inspiration will stop?
Oh, absolutely. I think I think creative resources, the reservoir, is finite. I think it can dry up. I think you can get to a point where you just should open a little frame shop in town and close up the inkwell.
Well, luckily for your readers, that hasn't happened yet. Former two-time U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins, his new book is called Aimless Love, New and Selected Poems, and he'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 at Town Hall, Seattle. Thanks so much for stopping by here today.
Very nice to stop in and talk to you. Thanks.